Life in the city has its share of strange and dangerous things. But at least in more populous areas, there is the expectation of the unusual, and a tolerance of the unorthodox. And acts of aggression or sedition are met with swift resolve in the strange find good company. But the city is not the province of the truly bizarre. The weirdest things brew where people have room to roam, under the cover of solitude, into the nooks and crannies that are tucked down too deeply into the landscape, into areas too secluded for the light of day to shine, or the influence of social norm to affect, or the long arm of the law to reach. This is a place where the expectation of consequence and the fear of retribution are unknown. This is where the schemers hide, the occultists practice, and the psychotic take refuge. This is where the overly curious do weird things, and the eccentric know no bounds. This is where the drifters wind up, where the addicts squat in abandoned land, or in silos, or even underground in hidden bunkers. This is where things that are oftentimes too bizarre or repulsive to believe can and do take place. Prepare your mind and join me in a journey into those hidden away places I like to call the Devil's Playground. A Man Named Forsythe, Part 3. When I came back to the table, Rhonda looked dazed. I knew my story was too much for her. That's what the drinks were for. I placed hers in front of her. How do you like my story so far?
I'm enjoying it. Please continue.
Where was I? The scotch is kicking in.
You said that the Eben put you under some sort of chemical spell, so you followed him inside the spaceship.
Oh, yes. We went inside. The ship seemed so much bigger on the inside than it appeared on the outside. He took me to a side chamber and sat me down in a chair and told me to wait for a moment while he went to get something for me. He left the chamber for a moment or so and then came back with the yellow book. Then he told me he was giving it to me as a gift for saving him from the dog. Then he explained a little about what it was and what it could do. Then he asked me if I had any questions for him. I said I did. I'm a private eye. We always have questions. I asked him about where they were from, and then I asked him how they got here and how their ship worked. He told me that he would bookmark the answers to my questions in the yellow book, and that all I had to do was to think of my questions and the yellow book would answer them for me. The meeting was brief, and then he bowed his head toward me and escorted me out of the ship. We said goodbye, and that was the last I ever saw of him.
You must have been stunned.
You could say that. I could barely explain to Lewis what had happened inside the ship. The dogs were being really weird. Jinxie was lying down like a camel with her chin on the ground and her front paws over her head, and Bullet was just circling around a tree. I sat there with Lewis and the dogs as the ship retreated like a giant oblong metallic bubble, slowly floating and retreating backwards and upwards to a point of the sky before zipping off in a flash into oblivion.
Did you tell anyone about it?
Who would I tell? The chief of police? We weren't on the best of terms. The press? I didn't want to seem like a crackpot. I had a good amount of evidence, but no one has ever reported on a story like this and survived with their credibility intact. But I didn't have to wait too long for an opportunity to present itself. After Lewis and I spent some time in an utter stupor, pinching ourselves that we hadn't hallucinated the whole event, and I had the constant reminder of the yellow book in my hands, so that wasn't an option,
We parted ways. I went home with my footage and the artifact, and carefully put everything important into a hard-shell briefcase before crashing on my bed like a log. It was the following day when I received a telegram to meet with Wilson, and it was a little off-putting, to be honest. It was almost rehearsed, like he knew what my state of mind might be or my reaction to this encounter. I had barely processed what I had seen, and here was this guy telling me that he knew my financial situation, and that he respected my abilities, and that he had an interest that was willing to cut me a deal if I would work with him. I was one mortgage payment away from defaulting on my loan, and I was barely treading water. I didn't know how he knew about what I'd seen, but I knew that I was onto something very important, and I knew that this offer was probably legitimate. There was a long pause. That was quite a story. And every word of it true, I swear. I never wanted to tell you, but I needed to tell someone in case something happens to me and you're the closest person in my life right now. I believe you, but I think you need some rest. She was being polite. I was drunk, but I took the cue. Thanks for letting me talk to you, Rhonda. It means a lot. We left the bar.
Visit us directly online at thedevilsplaygroundshow.com. Subscribe to the Devil's Playground podcast to stay tuned at anchor.fm/thedevilsplayground. And visit our merchandise store at tinyurl.com/thedevilsplaygroundstore. You've been listening to The Devil's Playground.